Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
The job here can sometimes literally cost more than they earn, more than they earn. You know, take-home care, the cost of long-term care for aging loved ones and people with disabilities rose 40% in the last decade. Medicaid offers help, but it can't meet the demand. You know, there are 700,000 seniors waiting in line, 700,000 waiting in line. And people with disabilities are stuck in Medicaid home care waiting lists for as long as 10 years if they survive to be qualified. It's amazing. Think about it. Family members like ours and yours often spend their own retirement savings to pay for the care of the loved ones. Others leave their jobs to care for them. And millions are part of the so-called sandwich generation, taking care of both your kids and your aging parents at the same time.
That's President Biden. He's actually speaking live right now about the care economy. I wasn't quite sure what he meant by that, but I guess he's talking about those who care for others. And now he's talking about guaranteed paid leave and how we're going to change that.
That means to help a loved one, many folks have to leave work to find out later that they've been fired. In the United States of America, no one should choose between caring for a parent who raised them, a child who depends on them, or a paycheck that they need. That's not why it should be the way it should be. No, I'm serious. You wonder whether I feel strongly about this. I do. Look, more often than not, from child care to elder care to lack of paid leave, it's women who bear the brunt. Yeah. Women who bear the brunt. Yeah. We saw that during the pandemic when 2 million women left their jobs to help take care of their families. Yeah. It hurts our whole economy to lose so much talent in the workplace. And it keeps women from earning equal pay they deserve because they say, well, you haven't been here. Look. In fact, care workers are predominantly women as well, women of color and immigrants who are overworked, overlooked, and underpaid.
So it's not racist? Of course it is. Tony, it's like you haven't been paying attention. Tony Katz Today, 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. That is the number. That's how you get to be a part of the show, a part of the story. Honestly, the only thing I take from this Joe Biden speech right now is I think he needs a haircut. I don't know, it's looking a little there on the sides and a little bit long there. It's just, I don't know, just not looking his level best. But remember, Joe Biden is in the news right now because Joe Biden is working very aggressively to do away with student debt. Oh yeah, he knows. He knows that the Supreme Court was very clear about this. You can't do this. And so he's like,
tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us. And the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
He's super proud of saying we're finding more and more ways to tell Americans we don't care what decisions you made that involve personal responsibility and financial responsibility, financial restraint. Little whoever they are over here just got their degree in gender studies, and there's no reason for them to have this $85,000 worth of debt or $142,000 debt from a college that you would never be allowed into because you don't share the proper ideology.
I will never stop to deliver student debt relief on hardworking Americans, and it's only in the interest of America that we do it. And again, it's for the good of our economy that's growing stronger and stronger, and it is. By freeing millions of Americans from this crushing debt of student debt, it means they can finally get on with their lives.
No, no, no. First, right now, the Dow is down 133. The NASDAQ is down 3. So let's not say the economy is getting stronger. And let's be clear that inflation remains. How about this? Here is the story. I wasn't even going to get into this right now, but hey, here we are. Here's the story that the economists are like, yeah, we don't think these rate cuts are going to come from the Federal Reserve. And it's like, no, really? Whatever gave you that idea? You mean guys like me who are saying that there will be no rate cuts? No, not guys like me. Me! You! We've been having this conversation for months now. But the economy is getting stronger? Who in the world is Joe Biden actually talking to come up with that insanity? Don't tell me he's been talking to Janet Yellen again.
I believe inflation will continue to come down.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just wondering if the economy continues to hold up no matter what happens on the Fed.
I think we've got a good, strong economy. We've got very strong domestic demand. Consumers are holding up. Some low-income consumers are perhaps exhausting their buffers of saving that they built up during the pandemic. We're seeing a little bit more distress at the household level there. But generally, households are in very good financial shape. Our financial system is generally quite strong. Things can always happen. There's always recession risk. Geopolitical developments could create risk to our economy. But I think we've got a good, strong economy that's on a solid track.
Can we, for a moment, it's good to know that the Treasury Secretary has now admitted that recession can come. But she's also the person who told us that inflation would be transitory. Can I please not listen to her when she tells me that everything's going all right in the households? Credit card debt is $1.13 trillion. We're seeing defaults everywhere. We're seeing people bring more and more access to their 401ks and other retirement funds to be able to handle the everyday costs. And then I get some fools on social media. Well, after a pandemic, inflation necessarily goes up. It's those Republicans that are making a big deal about it. No, no, people not being able to afford eggs, they're making a big deal out of it. You took a pandemic, and then you said, let's pass this, and let's pass that, and let's pass the other. And I'm not arguing that Trump did a great job in spending. I'm saying he did a lousy job in spending. I'm saying Biden did a worse job in spending. He's still doing a worse job when it comes to the spending. And all it has done is harm us. That's all it's done. We are worse off for it. Just so we understand each other, we're worse off for it. Biden wants to tell me, thank goodness, we're paying off those student loans. You didn't go to college because you couldn't afford to go to college. You didn't spend more than you could afford. And now you are the ones who have to pay for somebody else to be irresponsible because Joe Biden thinks it's good for the economy. He's buying votes and everybody knows it.
I, like an awful lot of people in this audience, was the first in my family to go to college and watch my dad struggle to help me get there. And
Joe Biden was not first in his family to go to college. He had a... Was it an uncle or was it his father? He was not the first in his family to go to college. He says this a lot. He says this often, but he lies often too. I believe it is his father went to Johns Hopkins. His grandfather, he claimed, was an All-American football player for Santa Clara College in California. He lies all the time. It's just disgusting. And you say to me, well, Trump lies too. Okay, they're both liars. Which one will have better policies for America? There you go. Glad we had this talk. Meanwhile, John Stewart. Something happens when you become rich and famous. You really start thinking that you're important, but you lose, well, clearly your soul. That story is coming up. This is Tony Katz today. I share with you something that Jon Stewart shared on The Daily Show. He's back to doing The Daily Show. He does it one day a week. Tony Katz today. Guys, good to be with you. Find everything going on at TonyKatz.com. TonyKatz. TonyKatz.com is where you find everything. He's talking about Israel. Now, we should be clear about something. Hamas is a terrorist organization. Hamas needs to be destroyed. Hamas being destroyed is the only way there can be peace. The only way. The people calling for ceasefire are despicable and low. They are telling Israel they should just lay back and take it. And the people who want to make an argument that, look, we don't have to fund Israel. Okay. I accept the terms of your argument. You're right. The United States doesn't have to send Israel anything. I agree that they do not have to send Israel anything. But we should, at the very least, be clear about a couple things. Like, for example, the Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, speaking in front of a Senate panel, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, he's asking the questions.
Secretary Austin, thank you for acknowledging in response to Senator Wicker that Hamas committed war crimes on October 7th and has been committing them every day since by using human shields. I want to address what the protesters raised earlier. Is Israel committing genocide in Gaza?
Senator Cotton, we don't have any evidence of genocide being created.
So that's a no. Israel's not committing genocide in Gaza.
We don't have evidence of that, to my knowledge. Yeah.
Better than Director Burns and Director Haynes did last month at the Intelligence Committee when they dodged that question. You stand accused by the...
Very, very honest answer. No. Now, I don't have evidence of that as the official way they answer these questions, but of course Israel is not engaged in a genocide. That is a lie told by progressives, who, via their Marxism, look at this as an opportunity to destroy everything around them. Israel's only step one, as we have discussed repeatedly. As we have repeatedly engaged, Israel is not the goal. Israel is the start. Mitch McConnell pointing out on the Senate floor, America cannot afford to lose moral clarity about the Gaza conflict. And shame on Biden for, quote, indulging, where he indulged his radical base and called for an immediate ceasefire. That's exactly what Joe Biden did. Joe Biden is trash. But let's not leave out Jon Stewart. Now, I know what you're going to say to me, but Tony, Jon Stewart's Jewish. What does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with anything at all? This is a clip from the show he did the other night. I'm going to pick through it a little bit just to for the sake of time and get rid of what he thinks is hilarious. But let's start here.
The verbal gymnastics that the American government must undertake so as not to offend the delicate sensibilities of a country we provide most of the weapons for is... Yeah! Every time America tells the world that there's something we won't allow, Israel seems to say, challenge accepted. Are they willfully trying to provoke us? Or perhaps they're just reading our principles from right to left. It's upset.
Get it? Principles right. Hebrew is from right to left. That's actually a little bit cute, but wrong. But I want to start with something he said. And I think it's important to go over because one of the things that the political left does time and time again through their Marxists is discuss this one is a colonialist and this one is an imperialist. Let us listen again.
The verbal gymnastics that the American government must undertake so as not to offend the delicate sensibilities of a country we provide most of the weapons for is... Yeah! Every anytime America tells the world that there's something we won't allow, Israel seems to say, challenge accepted. Are they willing?
So we provide the weapons so we get to decide what the country does. It's at least nice to see the political left saying, you have to be our puppet. So when we engage this conversation about who the imperialists are, it's clearly, well, it's John Stewart. We give you this, but you have to do what we tell you to do. That's his argument. That's his, not my argument. That's his argument. Right there. But he continues.
Netanyahu to be present. What the f*** are we doing here? The subtext of all this is America knows this is wrong. But it apparently doesn't seem to have the courage to say it in a straightforward manner. America and Israel both know that you cannot bomb your way into safety. We learned that lesson in Iraq and Afghanistan. They learned it in southern Lebanon. They laid siege there, occupied the southern area for 20 years. All it did was birth and strengthen Hezbollah.
That's not what happened. First of all, you can absolutely bomb your way into a level of safety and security. Just take a look at Dresden. This is a purposeful bastardization of history. No, you can't do it in Afghanistan if you're not actually interested in teaching the Afghans how to fight. You don't get to compare Israel as a nation to the embarrassment of the United States being unwilling to train Afghan forces the way they need to be trained, which would be something like, I don't know, light infantry, cavalry, and not utilizing air superiority when they don't have an ability to keep the power on to be able to focus where the aircraft are going to go. And that's how they got overtaken by the Taliban in about 7.5 seconds. Remember, Joe Biden told us, Taliban isn't going to take over the country. They don't have that capability. Lebanon, being in Lebanon, or engaging in a fight in Lebanon, isn't what created Hezbollah. I mean, that would be, a rather large stretch to rather what it is the Iranian regime is desperate to push forward and fund to try and destroy Israel. Note that this is not a conversation of Israeli perfection. This is a conversation of what happens to somebody when they lose their soul, which is exactly the place that John Stewart is in. Israel's the problem. Israel's to blame. Israel's doing too much. Israel's making this person an enemy. Israel's making this person angry. Hamas is a terrorist organization that murdered 1,200. They raped women, took videotape of it. They killed babies, and they took the babies and the women hostage. And now you're going to tell me, the rational people of the world, that we should tell them to stop because the Gaza Health Ministry is putting out numbers?
And they're about to do it all over again, and we are letting them. Real friends take the f***ing keys, because friends don't let friends bomb that much. And after this recent week, with so much horror, perhaps America finally finds the need for a new approach with Israel. With more justice and less cruelty.
The U.S. and Israel are closing in on what would be their largest weapons deal since the war in Gaza began.
See, we should restrain them, but look, we signed a new weapons deal with them. John Stewart thinks that Hamas, through the Gaza Health Ministry, which is Hamas, puts out accurate numbers on the number of dead. What happens to someone when they lose their ability to be rational? No, John Stewart, please stop it with the idea that somehow you are engaged in a moral conversation. What you are engaged in, I believe, is immoral. Israel should lay back and take it is not morality. Well, Tony, it's been enough bombing. No, it's been enough bombing when Hamas is destroyed so we can actually have peace. And may I also add that if you don't see that, well then, God, you don't really see anything. This is Tony Katz today. It seems that when it comes to basketball, nothing works out the way I want it to. And I didn't put money on anything. I'm just not the betting type on sports. But I wanted Iowa over South Carolina for the women, and that didn't happen. And then I wanted Indiana State, because I'm an Indiana guy, there in the NIT, and that didn't happen. And then I wanted Purdue over UConn, because Connecticut, come on. And then UConn goes back-to-back. It's like, all right, I'm 0 for 3, people. That is just not cool. Tony Katz today. What is happening, everybody? Let me bring in JMV. He is the voice of sports that we utilize over here. He knows all things in all places. The game last night, UConn 75, Purdue 60. Did Purdue play that poorly, or is UConn just simply that good?
Well, I certainly didn't think Purdue played great by any stretch of the imagination, but it was so much UConn that it was anything else, Tony. It really was. And you could tell the game plan defensively, they were going to allow, you know, Zach Edey, you know, to get his, and that's okay, and just take away everything else. You know, being one of the better three-point shooting teams in the nation throughout this season, you couldn't tell that last night. And Purdue hit one, right? Took, what, seven, I think, in the game. And that was the game plan defensively. And what UConn can do, they can just run the length in the backcourt time and time again at you. I thought Matt Painter made a great point after the game. He said, hey, you know, we can deal with like one lockdown defender, for example, in teams that we play. That's one thing. But when you have them in waves on the floor, starters coming off the bench, that's what Danny Hurley has put together. And timely shot making on the offensive end. And, you know, obviously you just can't lean fully on Zach Edey. Here's the other thing that you noticed this last night. Zach Edey, you know, normally plays the entire game anyway. And he's 7'4", 280, 290 pounds, whatever. And he is in great shape, great condition. For the first time last night, Tony, you saw him get tired. And Bill Raftery mentioned that right before he exited the game for like a 33-second rest. But you know, he traveled on the interior, and you could tell he was dragging a little bit. He was tired. Those guys were wearing him out. They played at the UConn pace. They played at the UConn style. And there's a reason why they did, is because UConn and Danny Hurley, they forced that upon you. That's how good they have been, whether it's this year or last year. And they were just way too good for the Boilermakers. It's not like Purdue played a bad game last night. It's just UConn was that good.
There was a lot of talk about Coach Danny Hurley of UConn. They go back-to-back, first time since 2006, 2007, I believe it is, and that he was on the court. He was very vocal, and he was very vocal when it came to Purdue players. As you saw, was Coach Hurley out of line?
I think it's entertaining, but he's a psycho. He's an absolute psycho. I want to be interested to see, you know, when this like hits a really rough patch, because he looks like a dude that one of these days is going to end up jacking somebody on the floor or doing something that's going to get him suspended. So while, is it the best? No. Is it embarrassing at times for him? Yes. I would take those antics in a minute, because the dude can flat coach. And honestly, from the outside looking in, I kind of laugh about it, because it's so silly. I mean, heck, Tony, he doesn't even have to really do that. He doesn't have to act that way. I mean, pushing your own player while, you know, the ball's being put in play and he's on the floor last, you don't have to do that. You're doing that for show and effect, and there's a combination mixture there where you're also psychotic. So you mix all that together, and now back-to-back national championships where everybody's going to be fawning all over him. I'm sure the crazy will be on the rise and hit some sort of crescendo, but yeah, I guess I don't overly mind it, Tony, like everybody else might.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports. Let me move it over to the women's side really quick before getting in some other possible offseason changes in college basketball. You've got South Carolina with the undefeated season over Iowa. But the only reason people were watching was because of Caitlin Clark. They were watching this sensation, and the numbers prove it. We're talking about the LSU game had 12.8 million viewers, which was more than so many different men's football games and basketball games. Then there was the game, I forget even which one they played to get to the championship. Then there was the game against South Carolina.
The game against South Carolina peaked at 24 million viewers. The average audience was 18.7 million viewers. This is a women's game. That is the biggest audience, men or women. You have to go back to 2019, and you have to take a look at Virginia Texas Tech in the NCAA title game. This is all Caitlin Clark, or has women's basketball now become something to watch?
Well, she's going to leave women's college basketball after lifting it up higher than it was, Tony, whenever she got there. There's no question about that. But there's also no question that the hype was surrounding her, that hype was about her. And certainly it's going to fall. It's going to decrease once she leaves, and that's going to be to the benefit of the Indiana Fever, who will draft them her next week, number one overall. And she'll be playing for that team and lift up the WNBA as well. But there is just a phenomenon about her right now that she is fun to watch. She plays the style of basketball and what this era, Tony's all about, up and down the floor, can pass it really well, and will stop and shoot it in your eyeball from about 30 feet away. Very Steph Curry-like is how she plays. And that's what people enjoy. And that's really the world of basketball in general from top to bottom right now. So there is no doubt she lifted the game of women's basketball to heights while she was there, and I'm sure there will be somewhat of a slide, but she will leave it much higher than where it was, and that's a good thing for women's basketball as we move forward.
Yeah, the issue for college women is that they have no one to keep it there. But for the WNBA and the Indiana Fever, get the first pick. I mean, it's my town. It's your town. She may sell out those first few games. There has to be some winning, I think, for that to continue. But let me bring it back over. Let me bring it back over to the men really quick. And as we talk about Purdue losing to UConn, you've got John Calipari. Kentucky, he's heading out because it was a first-round exit, and it was embarrassing, and it's been a while since Calipari has done anything of value in Kentucky. He's going to take the job at Arkansas, which I think Arkansas is flat-out nuts. Crazy. But there is, amongst the rumor mill folk, that Purdue coach Matt Painter might be a guy very interested in coaching at Kentucky. You know Painter, you know the landscape. What say you?
Yeah, in no way. He's going to stay at Purdue, and Purdue is going to be his final job one of these days, whenever he decides to step away. Yeah, he's not going to leave for that gig. Now, all these guys, I don't know if Painter will do this or not, but you know, a lot of these guys, I'm assuming Nate Oates, for example, Tony, probably had a little bit of leverage there, the Alabama head coach, because of the interest that was initially sought out, that he may have got, you know, a little bit of a raise out of it. He was going to get one anyway because he took his team to the Final Four. But, you know, maybe some guys might end up leveraging themselves to get a raise or maybe an extension because of this open Kentucky gig right now. But it's not going to be Matt Painter. Matt Painter's going to stay where he is. He's comfortable. He's built something. He believes in what he has built. And honestly, even as long as he's been into it, I think he believes that he is just kind of getting started with the brand of basketball that he can play. And next year is going to be interesting for them. No Zach Edey. So they're going to look drastically different. He's still got good players around him. He's still got good players there. But without Edey, that is going to be really, really interesting, really kind of odd to see the flow in which they have on the floor. But he is unmistakably, Tony, going to stay in West Lafayette. And coaching Kentucky probably goes after Billy Donovan, who has been there as an assistant in the past, obviously the head coach of the Bulls. I know his name's been floated around as well. Really anybody, Danny Hurley's name has been floating around too. So they'll go out and get somebody really big and see where they can go. And Calipari, I bet you money, because of money, NIL money, and the transfer portal will transform Arkansas into something sooner rather than later that may end up being short-lived because of how old he is. But I bet you that he does something with that. And I can't wait to see Arkansas and playing in Lexington. I mean, that'll be some good drama, a good soap opera coming up next year as well. So a lot of good things happening, but one of them is not going to be Painter going to Lexington.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports, JMV1070 on X, JMV1070. You can find him on X there. Now we make it to the trade heard round the world in the NFL that makes no sense. And if you're part of the AFC South and you are like me, a Colts fan, you're like, oh, bloody hell. Stephon Diggs from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans.
and you look at Buffalo and you're like, what the hell are you guys doing? And then you take a look at Houston wiping out the final 3 years of the contract, taking $3.5 million guaranteed, putting it into this season, which is going to give him $22.5 million guaranteed in 2024, setting him up to be a free agent in 2025. What kind of deal is this? What was Buffalo thinking? And if you're Stephon Diggs, how good do you feel that you got your money early?
No, you feel good about it all the way around. Buffalo feels good because they were in financial straits with the salary cap, so they had to unload some things. They felt that the relationship between their former wide receiver and their quarterback, Josh Allen, was not where it wanted to be. He had been a distraction, he being Diggs, the past couple of years. So they didn't feel, I don't think, that it was that compelling of, well, I can't believe you guys just did that. I think that's what they had to do for the organization moving forward. And if you're Houston, Tony, you're going for it right now. You are going for it right now. Coming up next year, you kind of saw with winning the AFC South and what your rookie quarterback can do. Here's the other thing, Tony, they're doing right now. This is why a lot of us don't really understand what Chris Ballard and Indy is doing. They're taking advantage of their rookie quarterback. Their rookie quarterback coming off his rookie season, C.J. Stroud, is on a rookie deal. So that is when you bring up, you know, in veteran components to make him better and win in the now, because you know that C.J. Stroud is going to be paid a high dollar and you're not going to be able to do and to function and to bring guys in the same further down the road. So you play for the now, which I am all for. And Chris Ballard continues to look like he's playing for the future or bringing back their own. It is weird because Chris Ballard and Indy, he doesn't really do what anybody else does. And I think that's good if you're actually the smartest guy in the room, but he's yet to prove that he is that smartest guy in the room and continues to go by the blueprint that a lot of people in Indy don't understand. You watch Tennessee get better. You're certainly seeing Houston trying to get better and win right now. You know what Jacksonville has been, and within the AFC South, which is going to be highly competitive next year, the Colts are running it back with their own, which has not been very pleasing to the fan base here.
Speaking of people who are the smartest in the room, it is not unnoticed that Bill Belichick hasn't landed. Former coach of the New England Patriots, all the brain, all the championships, he hasn't landed anywhere. Why not?
I think because Dallas' job didn't open, Tony. I think because Mike McCarthy ended up coming back when there was so much speculation after the way that they went out again in the postseason that a change would be made there. And I think the moment they decided, you know, stick with head coaching continuity and to bring him back, I think it was all for naught. Because you look at all those other gigs, and I never really thought it was reasonable that he was going to end up in Atlanta with the rebuild that they were going through, nor Washington with the rebuild that they were going through. But Dallas made a lot of sense. All right, here's a team that gets to this point and their head coach can no longer take him to that level in which is necessary or is expected. So when Jerry Jones decided to stay with Mike McCarthy, I think that ended any kind of conversation or talk that Bill Belichick would end up, you know, coaching again after New England in the NFL this year. So he sits it out. Maybe he comes back. Probably, I would guess, somebody would end up reaching out after next year. We know about the NFL job situations. But I think when McCarthy ended up coming back, that ended any thought that Bill Belichick would transition from New England to another gig in one season.
JMV, he is the voice of sports on X, JMV 1070 1070, JMV 1070. Find him there. I appreciate you, my friend. More to get to. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today. Canada is laughable. And I'm not talking about in the regular, normal South Park kind of way. I mean that this is a country that has slowly descended into progressive madness. What Justin Trudeau, Blackface Trudeau, has done. Oh, what? I'm not allowed to say that. The guy was in blackface multiple times. The guy, he's a terrible, terrible guy. Also, love child of Fidel Castro. No, we can't say that either. You know it's true. Take a look at the pictures. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? Take a look at the photos and you tell me. I think I'm onto something. Justin Trudeau is a terrible leader, a radical progressive who has helped Canada devolve and descend into madness. Never mind what it did in COVID. Never mind what it did to truckers and wanting to arrest people. They are now into full-on thought policing in Canada. Deputy ministers who want to tell you that the problem really is capitalism and how do we find a better way? The dissent has turned them into this laughable nation. And I guess maybe laughable isn't the right word, considering how dangerous this all is. This story is from the College Fix, where a professor or scholar, I love how they say scholar, from McGill University is having a conversation that what needs to happen to combat misinformation. Anytime you hear the term misinformation from the mainstream media and from the academia set, guaranteed they're trying to keep you from speaking. What they want is to be able to monitor the internet and license journalists. You mean the government decides what is and isn't acceptable to say? Well, that's going to work out well. That's not authoritarian in any way, shape, or form. But these people who claim to be about freedom and claim to be about decency, they're all for this stuff. They know, they must know in their souls that it won't work out well. But somewhere their ideology says this is what you have to do in order to, you know, keep people safe or some other kind of nonsense. What you need to do is deal with the fact that what's happening across their borders, and we should engage in the, quote, professionalization, says this scholar of journalism, by requiring licenses for those in the profession, saying, and I'm quoting, at the moment in Canada, anyone can pretend to be a journalist. Pretend. Well, I think that there should be something to the idea of the citizen being able to speak. But remember, Canada's not the United States. Canada's Canada. It's a fundamentally different place. And now you see not only fundamentally different, but really bad. Sad thing is people try and push this here in the States. We still have to fight this, even though we have the First Amendment. But my God, Canada, a shell of itself and way too close to our border. This is Tony Katz today.